Hey there, y'all. We'll get to that episode that you pressed play on in just a second, but I wanted to make sure you knew that the club is opening again for new members next Tuesday, April 30th. The club is a virtual community of parents of kids with big, baffling behaviors and vulnerable nervous systems, and you can read all about it over at robingoble.com/the club. If you already get emails from me, you'll get a message on the 30th reminding you that the club is open. Otherwise, set yourself a calendar reminder to go to robingoble.com/the club next Tuesday, the 30th. Alrighty, let's get to that show you're waiting for.
So when your kid's behavior is baffling, and yours is too sometimes,
yeah,
I know. Let's take a break from all the bamboozle here on the baffling.
Hey, 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 everybody. Welcome back to the Baffling Behavior Show, or the podcast formerly known as Parenting After Trauma. I'm your host, Robin Goble. And today's episode is going to be an episode where I don't tell you what to do exactly. You're not going to leave here with a bunch of new tips and ideas and things you can try out. I try to record those episodes with a lot of regularity because I know you need that. But sometimes what we need is a lot of connection. Sometimes what we need is a lot of commiseration, right? Just moments of knowing and experiencing and feeling that we're not alone. We're not the only person on the planet having this experience. That whatever my experience is, isn't so unique. I mean, how could it be that unique if someone's making a podcast episode about it? And that experience of being not alone is actually really important when it comes to really hard experiences, not leaving lasting trauma symptoms. So that's today's episode. Today's episode is an episode of You're Not Alone. I know that the vast majority of y'all listening to this podcast, whether you listen as a parent or whether you listen as a professional, I know that the very vast majority of you live with someone and love someone who seems like they're chronically dysregulated. And they might actually be chronically dysregulated, but I also know that living with someone who seems chronically dysregulated, it starts to feel like it's just truth, right? Like they are chronically dysregulated. And the line between seems like they're chronically dysregulated and just straight up are chronically dysregulated can get a little blurry. And I totally get there. I mean, for what it's worth, it is helpful to notice the difference between seems like they're chronically dysregulated and actually is chronically dysregulated. It can be helpful to notice that, but that's not actually what I plan to really talk about today. Even if the person you're thinking of isn't chronically dysregulated, my guess is that there are periods of constant chronic dysregulation. And y'all, it's exhausting, absolutely exhausting. Now, real quick, let's pause for a second. If you are the person in your family who is chronically dysregulated, please hear this episode as overflowing with compassion for you. I know that living with somebody chronically dysregulated is second in awfulness only to actually being chronically dysregulated. And some families, maybe you kind of go back and forth. I think that kind of happens in my family, right? That like neither of us are immune. Neither of us, meaning me and my husband, are immune from having the experience of kind of being chronically dysregulated, which means one of us is sometimes living with someone chronically dysregulated. So this episode is certainly not criticism of the individual who is more chronically dysregulated. We're just pausing that experience for a moment and thinking in this episode about the caregiver or the person who is living with that chronically dysregulated person. So again, if you're the chronically dysregulated person, this episode's not throwing shade. I promise. I promise. I promise. I promise. So we know, right, from listening to the Baffling Behavior Show, and if you this is your first time, welcome. And I invite you to hit play on some of the older episodes. But we know that nervous systems are always trying to match each other, right? That's essentially what neuroception is. And part of our neuroception is seeking out information on the state of the nervous system of the other people we're with. And if those folks are dysregulated, our first instinct is to shift into protection mode, shift into dysregulation as well, right? Because it's true that being with somebody who's in protection mode, being with somebody who's dysregulated, often is actually dangerous. So we're going to flip into protection mode as well to match them and to, you know, work to keep ourselves safe. That's neuroception. And specifically the between aspect of neuroception. There's an older podcast episode, well, it's not that old, it's a couple weeks ago, all about the between aspect of felt safety and neuroception. So you can scroll back a little bit and find that as part of the felt safety series, the between episode. I think it's the third one in the three-part felt safety episode, felt safety series. Part of where we're getting cues of danger or safety from, right, is the state of the nervous system of the person that we're with. So if we spend a lot of time with someone who is chronically dysregulated, chronically in protection mode, it makes a lot of sense that we're going to eventually feel like we're in chronic protection mode ourselves. And while our nervous system, just like everybody else's, is longing to find safety, longing to rest into safety, you know, if you find yourself in protection mode often enough, you're going to kind of start just defaulting to protection mode. I mean, that is what's happening with the person you're living with who's chronically dysregulated. They're kind of defaulting to chronic protection mode. Eventually, that starts to happen to us as well. Yet my guess is for everybody listening, you very likely might be the person in your home who is tasked with the responsibility of being the most regulated, and that you're being tasked with that responsibility even if you aren't very regulated yourself. There's this expectation. There's this felt responsibility of just continuing to deal with everyone else's dysregulation. And we tend to do one of two things then. One, we kind of disconnect or dissociate from our own dysregulation. Or two, we turn to our own inner resources more than we can turn to co-regulation. Right? There's probably not a great space to turn to for co-regulation if you live with somebody who's chronically dysregulated. So it makes sense that we're turning more to our own inner resources than to co-regulation. Now, turning to our own inner resources, that's not bad. That's what self-regulation is. But we were never meant to rely solely on self-regulation. Humans aren't. So no matter how old you get, how mature you get, how, you know, strong that self-regulation muscle gets, how much co-regulation you've internalized, right? And you can learn all about how self-regulation is really just internalized co-regulation if you go back in the podcast archives to episode 43, which is called There's No Such Thing as Self-Regulation. Okay, so you can jump back to that one if that's kind of a new concept for you. Even if we have lots and lots of internalized co-regulation, we have lots and lots of self-regulation to turn to and rely on ourselves, it still isn't what we as humans were meant to do always. I say this with hesitancy, as I know that for many of you listening, doing something different isn't possible. Okay? It isn't possible for you to either one, stop dissociating from or disconnecting from your own dysregulation, and or it's not possible for you to stop over-relying on your own self-regulation. Right? And I don't love highlighting parts of your life that might be really hard or impossible to shift or change. But y'all, it's also true that not talking about those things is actually adding more traumatic stress to a situation that's already overflowing with toxic stress. The constant scanning for safety and the constant being surrounded by dysregulation, it's exhausting. And the chronicity of this is eventually going to be experienced in our own nervous system as so much danger that it becomes life threat. And then that's going to push us down the possum pathway. And along with that possum pathway comes feelings of hopelessness. And now, y'all, now we've got a feedback loop going. I talked about this in the Felt Safety series as well, right? That as our nervous system starts to have more and more experiences of lack of safety, we are starting to tune into that more, and we're neuroceiving that, and we're kind of neuroceiving our own, essentially like our own history of lack of safety. That's causing us to feel not safe in this moment. And again, this feedback loop just keeps going and going and going. There's another part of this, though, that I don't know if I've ever heard anybody else really talk about. There's a rhythm to all relationships, a rhythm of serve and return. We make energetic serves to someone, and we expect to have an energetic return. It's like a relationally energetic game of catch. So imagine an actual game of catch or tossing a balloon back and forth in this nice, gentle serve and return way. That is the kind of hoped for energetic relational rhythm. Now, in an actual game of catch, if you throw too hard, it's hard for the other person to catch. And if you don't even make an attempt to catch it, or it bonks you in the head, or you catch it and refuse to toss it back, well, that becomes a pretty lousy game of catch, right? I mean, just thinking about playing catch like that is irritating. Just thinking about it. To be longing for like a rhythm of back and forth, serve and return, to be longing for that predictability and then to not get it, and to not only not get it, but to have it be totally out of your control to try to get it, it feels terrible, right? And of course, I'm not actually talking about a real live game of catch. If you're playing a real live game of catch like that, you're probably going to say, sorry, this isn't fun, and you're going to walk away from it. That's what's happening in the energetic relational serve and return when we're in relationship with somebody who's in chronic protection mode and who's chronically dysregulated. That the serve and return, the energetic serve and return of relationship, feels like the relationship energy is being thrown too hard and you can't catch it. Or it feels like when you toss something their way, they're not attempting to catch it, right? Or they catch it and they're refusing to throw it back. That's what it feels like to be in relational serve and return with somebody who's chronically dysregulated. And it feels awful. Dr. Bruce Perry's work around strengthening and organizing the brainstem talks a lot about creating experiences that are rhythmic, repetitive, relational, and somatosensory to help heal, organize, strengthen the brainstem. Kids who have vulnerable nervous systems, either early trauma or toxic stress, especially attachment and developmental trauma, they've had their rhythms of relationship disrupted, right? They don't engage in serve and return in the way that we expect. Restoring and reorganizing and regulating these rhythms is a crucial part of working with these kids. In my therapy practice, I focused heavily on experiences and activities that were literally rhythmic, repetitive, relational, somatosensory. And I taught their parents how to support their kids with rhythmic, repetitive, relational, somatosensory experiences. My friend Marty Smith, y'all know Marty, right? Marty Smith, occupational therapist, she created an assessment based on Dr. Perry's work to help parents see the aspects of their child that could benefit from some extra support. And many of those recommendations are rhythmic, repetitive, relational, somatosensory. Marty is a pretty constant special guest over in the club, and she has done a couple masterclasses for us. Marty has written a fantastic book called The Connected Therapist, where you can get ideas about rhythmic, repetitive, relational, somatosensory experiences. And Marty has just published, in fact, I didn't really plan this, but now that I think about it, Marty's newest book will be published, gosh, right before this episode goes live. Her new book is called Sensory Healing After Developmental Trauma. And it's written for professionals, but I think even if you're not a professional, especially if you have some background in beginning to understand regulation and some of Dr. Perry's work, that book will have a lot of ideas for you and can be really helpful and helping your kids rediscover or discover really maybe for the first time rhythmic, repetitive, relational experiences, which will then help to create rhythmic, repetitive, relational serve and return and relational energetic experiences. I actually do have a podcast series about strengthening the foundation of the brain. It starts back at episode 47. There's 6 parts to that series. You can also go to my website, go to the free resources page, and you can find all 6 of those episodes kind of stored together so they're easier to find and to access. So I'm actually getting way off track here. I didn't intend to go this far down this path about rhythmic, repetitive, relational, somatosensory experiences, but that is how I help kids find the serve and return that exists in relationship. And it can be a really great thing to keep in mind when living with somebody who's chronically dysregulated, that part of what's happening for them is that their serve and return has been disrupted. And if we can help them rediscover that with rhythmic, repetitive, relational, somatosensory experiences, that's a fun and playful way that we can practice helping the nervous system shift out of protection mode and shift back into connection mode. Y'all, I'll just say again, this is so hard. There is so much grief in continuing to send a relational serve to someone you love, someone you care about, somebody that you are longing to be in relationship with, and not getting that serve sent back to you. There can almost be this sense of kind of like, where are you? This sense of like just searching, longing for that person to be there and to receive your relationship offerings and to send some back to you. It is so unbelievably lonely. And I know that some of you are like me and you had a really connected relationship with this person before their nervous system started to really, really, really struggle. And there is so much grief for what has been lost, right? And that lives side by side with the hope that the ease and the connection and the safety can return. And y'all, I absolutely, of course, believe that there is so much hope. There's so much hope, or I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be behind the microphone. I wouldn't be doing the work that I did. I don't know how I would make it through every single day if there wasn't hope. I believe so much in the hope. But next to that hope, side by side with that hope, is the grief, is the acknowledgement that these experiences are traumatic for us. So I'll put some links down in the show notes about episodes where you can go to have those experiences really seen and validated for you too. I have an episode called When Parenting is Traumatic. I have an episode all about the grief in parenting. So I'll make sure that those episodes get linked in the show notes and you can find them really, really easily. Y'all, I know that living with somebody who's chronically dysregulating is so exhausting. It's demoralizing. We fall onto our own possum pathway ourselves. You might even want to go check out the What to Do When Your Nervous System is Fried episode if you're finding yourself really stuck on that possum pathway. I get it. And I told you at the beginning, this probably wasn't going to be a what to do episode, but more of a I see you episode. And I think we kind of need a mixture of both. I know the vast majority of you listening are living with someone chronically dysregulated. And I'm really, really grateful that you press play on this podcast, that you come here, and I'm sure there are other places in your life as well, to experience portions of a relationship that do feel safe, that do feel connected. And it's pretty wild to think that we can get that through a podcast, but I know because of your emails that we can get that through a podcast. And I kept those ideas in mind. I took those ideas and tried to then weave them into the book that I wrote too, Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors, that I really wanted as much as possible for the book to be an experience in your life where you can be in relationship with somebody who isn't chronically dysregulated. And I know that these things, I know the podcast, I know the book, even the club, I know these things aren't replacements for actual in real life relationship with the person that you love, right? Offering you that connection and offering you that co-regulation. I know they're not a replacement, but it is what I can offer. And I'm so grateful that you come here to receive it. You come to the podcast, or maybe you've read the book, or maybe you're a member of the club. I'm so, so, so grateful. That's where the hope comes from, y'all. That's where I can see the hope. That even when things are hard, you continue to seek out spaces of connection and spaces of co-regulation. And I'm really honored to be a part of the community that gets to offer that to you. Thank you for tuning in again to another episode of the Baffling Behavior Show. We will be back with you again next week. Are you ending this episode with maybe a big sigh of relief, like, yes, finally, someone gets me and my kids? But also maybe a sense of like, okay, but now what? All right, y'all, I've got lots of possible now whats. If you want to connect with me directly, like pick my brain, have access to me almost every day, not to mention hundreds of other parents from around the world who totally get what it's like to be you, then you're going to want to join us in the club. We have monthly live events, including groups for siblings of dysregulated kids, a huge video library with something like 80 or 90 videos, plus transcripts and certificates of completion. Plus, of course, a very active forum that I'm participating in every single day, We open for new members periodically, so go check robingoble.com/the club. If we aren't open now, you can put yourself on the waiting list and I'll let you know the moment we open for new members. That's robingoble.com/the club. Now, if you're a professional and you want to strengthen your capacity to work with the families of kids with big baffling behaviors and vulnerable nervous systems, plus use all of my materials, including a 12-module course that follows raising kids with big baffling behaviors, plus be included in an online searchable directory so families all over the world could find you, then you're looking for Being With, which is my year-long immersive training program that runs January through December. So you'll want to go to robingoble.com/beingwith, read all about it, and if you're interested, put yourself on that waiting list too. Now, if you just maybe need a little extra connection and co-regulation, but don't feel like you need to join the club, then you can just keep listening to my podcast, or you could go subscribe to my Start Here podcast, and that'll give you 10 episodes in order that will take you through cultivating a great foundation of parenting with regulation, connection, and felt safety. That's at robingoble.com/start here. You have to go there. You can't just find it in your podcast app. Or you could get yourself a copy of Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors, paper book, audio book, ebook. You can get that anywhere books are sold. Or you could just head to my website, download one of my very many free resources. I keep them all really easy to access at robingoble.com/free resources. Webinars, masterclasses, ebooks, infographics, all sorts of stuff. Go check it out. See what of those things could be supportive of you or maybe to the other adults in your life who are helping support you and your child. There are just so many ways that you and I could be more connected, and you can get the amount of co-regulation and support that you need. If it feels like a lot to remember, all you have to do is go to robingoble.com and take your time clicking around, seeing what I got there. I am so, so glad you and I are connected now, and I can't wait to be with you again soon in our next episode of the Baffling Behavior Show. Bye-bye, y'all.